morning, everyone. Just as an announcement, this is going to be a community forum, and today we actually will not be using audio equipment. So if you're in the back and have a hard time right now hearing me and want to move a little bit closer, we want to give you the opportunity to do that. But we want to first start by saying welcome. Good morning to all the city officials, friends of Coro, and also all of the incredible community members. My name is Jasmine Hill, and I'm glad to welcome you all to our community discussion on what is the logic of Upland. Thank you all for joining us. We are the 2011-2012 Coro Fellows Class. The Coro Center for Civic Leadership is a nonpartisan entity here to discover new truths about your city, the great city of Upland. Our organization has existed for close to 70 years to train future leaders. Each year, a group of dynamic leaders work together in a 9-month fellowship program exploring ways to improve our collective system of government. Coming here to Upland, we went through our very first group project, and you're going to see the results of that today. In this, we were asked to find the logic of Upland, figure out how and why it is the way that it is. You can imagine that this was a very large and broad task. Upland as a city has close to 74,000 residents. Originally founded on agriculture in particular, citrus farming, Upland still today holds many of the old-time charms of being a safe, small, tight-knit community. But what kinds of changes has Upland recently encountered? Traditionally, as a virtually homogenous, relatively conservative community with an upper middle class focus, Upland today is experiencing a surge in diverse low income and also different ethnicities coming into the city. So we brought all this together to try to figure out what really is the logic behind the city. To answer this question, cumulatively, the fellows class worked a total of 100 hours each, so that's 1,200 cumulative hours, to collect data, analyze news, crunch numbers with the census, but also interview city officials from the mayor to city manager to council members, to also visit very important community centers like the YMCA, the animal shelter, city halls where we spent a lot of our time, the hospital, the colonies. We also hit the pavement by talking to many of you, the community members, parents, underrepresented groups, teenagers, trying to engage on what folks really feel about their community. After 5 days of living in Upland, finding data, and with the help of all of you, we came to some conclusions on the logic of the city. We're going to share those with you today. We will present through a panel discussion with our fellows class to define what kinds of things we understood. We also have asked some of you to respond to the questions that we're going to be answering today. And we'll follow our 30-minute panel discussion with a question and answer period from each and every one of you. We now would like to introduce ourselves, but I first would like to present our moderator for this morning, Chris Margaronis.
Good morning. I'd just like to re-emphasize that 100 hours of work each since Tuesday, cumulatively 1,200 hours in a normal person's work schedule over a given year, it's almost 3/4 of the year of their work. So just think about that. It's our perspective in a limited amount of time, but if one person was working on that, 3/4 of the year. All righty, well, thank you again. My name is Chris Margaronis. I went to UC Riverside, but I'm originally from Santa Rosa, California.
My name is Ian Padley. I went to Richmond University, and I'm originally from Appleton, Wisconsin.
My name is Wes Farrell. I went to the University of Michigan, and I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan.
Hi, I'm Grace Naga, originally from Baltimore, Maryland, and went to the University of Maryland.
Hi, I'm Joaquin Beltran. I graduated from California State University, Los Angeles, and I am from the city of Dallas.
Good morning, my name is Micah Bumpus. I'm from Bartlesville, Oklahoma, and graduated from Texas A&M University.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ella Garrett, and I'm from Portland, Oregon, and graduated from the University of Oregon.
Good morning, my name is Emily Flaster. I'm from Santa Monica, California, and I attended American Jewish University.
Good morning, my name is Veronica Joseph. I'm from Pembroke Pines, Florida, and I went to Boston College.
Good morning, my name is Helen Pollack. I'm originally from Sacramento, California, and I'm a recent graduate of Claremont McKenna College of Justice.
Good morning, Drew Steinberg from Los Angeles, California. I went to University of Southern California. Good morning. My name is Jasmine Hill again. I'm from Northern California, and I just graduated from UCLA.
Thank you, fellows. All right, we're going to jump right into some of the questions that we had over there and some of your responses. The first question that we're going to go through is, how well is Upland serving its citizens? And one of the answers that we got up on the board is, as far as basic services, things are pretty good. However, when it comes to information, was put in quotations, there's some work to be done there. And I'd like to sort of gauge your responses. Do you agree with that? I'll restate it again. As far as basic services, the city does well, but when it comes to some of the other things, there's some gaps. Show of hands, do people think that there are some gaps in some of the services that the city provides? Anybody? All right. So we got a few hands there. We're going to jump into talking to the panel.
Excuse me one second. I have the police department on the line. They said they got a call that somebody fainted in here or sick. No? Okay.
Not yet. I didn't break yet.
It's always preemptive. That's good. Active.
You
think? All righty. Well, we're going to jump right into this question and get our panel. So let's play hardball. Fellows, how well is Upland serving its citizens? Why don't we go? Who wants to start off?
I can do that. So we really found that serving the community is both a strength and a weakness for Upland. We found that Upland is working together between the different sectors to fill community needs. This is really evidenced by the YMCA filling the need when the middle school was unable to offer basketball program at their school. The YMCA came in and was really able to work together and meet that need in the community. What we're also finding is that this is a weakness in that when filling gaps, there are still communities that need to be served, especially within the low-income community. And this is evidenced by the fact that 3,000 families qualify for subsidies, but only 600 are served.
Coming into this process, I think I had a notion that a government serves its people, and that was what I expected to see. And due to budget or different structures here, I found that there were limited programs, I thought, run by the city government to serve the students or serve the communities. Several programs that serve particularly low-income students for after-school programs or summer camps were partially also funded by grants or partnered with nonprofits. But what I was most struck by here is that the citizens serve each other. And at first I thought people were just giving that lip service. And you hear kind of catchphrases, and it's just, I think as the week went on, it just really resonated with me. I spoke to the St. Joseph's Food Bank and learned of some of the programs like Stevens Hope that supports families and the Transitional Homeless Shelter, and just the services that are in the nonprofits that are here to serve themselves and each other really gave me a new perspective on what it means for a community to serve its citizens.
One of the things I noticed that someone brought up that there's a communication issue. And so we're talking about the fact that Upland does fill in the gaps in certain areas, but are they filling the gaps for everyone in the community? Are all the voices heard? And are they only filling the gaps of the loudest voice in the community? And what can be done to ensure that multiple voices are heard? When I was thinking about it, I want to phrase it in the form of an example. If I said I'm going to give you $5 million, and what would you do with it? And your response is I would invest it in education. Now, what would it take for me to change your mind and change it from number one to number five? How can we get that dialogue going? What information would you need to say, education can take a back seat right now, it's not a priority for Upland, this is more pressing for right now. To ensure that we're not just talking about what we want in the future, what we want in the present for ourselves, but really as a community, what would benefit the community in the future, as well as future generations.
I think that is a great point that Veronica is holding. And I think that the reason for this maybe incongruence in priorities is a lack of vision by the city of Upland. For example, after talking to several business owners downtown, they were under the impression several years ago that downtown was going to be an area and a point of revitalization within the city, but were surprised to see the refocus on the colonies. So I think that if the city of Oakland will be able to establish a firm vision and where they wanted their priorities to go, that some of this confusion and this lack of cohesive communication would get much better.
All righty. Thank you, fellas. Let's move into our next question.
Is everyone able to hear? Do we need to use a microphone?
Stand up.
Okay, let's do that.
Stand. Yeah. All righty. We're going to jump into the next question, which is, what is the relationship between Upland's identity and its reality? Fellas, you want to take it away?
Thank you. Upland is commonly referred to, as I'm sure many in this room know, the city of gracious living. And we've gotten a sense of what that means to Upland. It includes clean and safe streets, healthy parks, and many city services, as well as ongoing beautification efforts for the city. However, we wonder whether this is a realistic identity for Upland in light of the budget issues that Upland is facing. Upland faces similar budget issues to the state of California and many, if not all, the other states in the nation. But Upland also faces unique budget issues related to spending habits, as well as ongoing and pressing lawsuits. And we're interested in challenging Upland to revisit its priorities in light of these issues with the identity.
Hey, Joaquin, no entiendo gracious living.
No entiendes gracious living? Yo tampoco, ¿qué es gracious living? I mean, what does gracious living really mean? You know, what does it mean for the homeless community? What does it mean for the potholes, the declining maintenance of the streets? What does it mean really for the business community in downtown? We did some interviews in the downtown business community, and they don't feel supported. They don't feel supported by the city. They don't feel supported by the Chamber of Commerce. And looking around, it looked like a ghost town. So what is this gracious living that we're really talking about? I think that is something that the city does need to address. I mean, it works for some people. It goes back to filling in the gaps. You know, it's really good at filling in certain gaps, but I guess its greatest strength is also its greatest weakness, because it's also really bad at not filling in certain other gaps. Again, the homeless community, the maintenance on the street, and the business community.
Well, can you touch on the center of the city, downtown? What is the center of this city?
Another great question. Apparently, there's four centers in the city. We're not quite sure. There's the Colonies, there's downtown, there's the YMCA, that's a potential center, there's the school, the hospital. We were not sure. What happens in our interviews, people often go outside of the city. You know, there's supposed to be a center, the heart of Upland, but it seems that it doesn't beat in full force. People go to restaurants outside of the city because that's what's happening. That's what's exciting, but there's not that type of excitement in Upland.
To a certain extent, I think this question of the downtown area and of building this tax base, this revenue base, that could support gracious living is that there are communities who want to be able to participate in it. When we spoke to downtown, they believe that they could be a very important part of creating revenue, and that if they had some support from the city, that they'd be able to support gracious living, and it's something that they're also interested in. So it may be a question of engaging communities who can participate in this interest and build it up.
I think that speaks to the communication piece too that Veronica touched on before. I think that maybe finding a city center would help really flesh out that idea of what is gracious living here for us. I've heard mentioned in some of our interviews the idea of starting a community center. Obviously, there would be ways that would need to happen to find funding for that or partnerships for that. But even just before that could happen, I've heard talk of town halls. Where are the forums for everybody's voice? Where does everybody think the city center is? I think we were surprised to find four different ones. I think we all took away our own concept of which of the centers really serves as it, but I don't think that a community can truly identify that or invest in it until everybody has had an input and you know where everybody's coming from as far as what they need from that center of their city.
I think we should also keep in mind the fact that Upland started with the identity maintaining reach up. Identity gracious living, but maybe that's not Upland's identity now. and it's up to Upland to come up together to try to understand if that's the identity Upland wants to support and what they would need to do to support the new identity.
Grace, you talked to the point about communication and trying to figure out, you know, public forums. Are there any other avenues that the city can do to sort of inform the public or maybe educate the citizens?
Yeah. So, you know, in conducting different interviews, we have found out that there's no new media type of way of communicating with its citizens. There's, in this new age, a lot of communities organize through Facebook, through Twitter. But that's not something that's really utilized in the city of Upland. In the last election, I believe they utilized that. They were outspent 10-1. But that is something that that council member who was elected is going to try to utilize. So I think they're moving in that direction, and I think that's a positive thing. But I think that's evidence to show where that information, conveying of that information, is lacking.
So that form of delivery, Twitter, Facebook, who does that really focus on? Is it the older generation, or who is into that, and how can we get in touch with that group?
The youth is missing from this picture. We need to involve the youth. They become the adults of Upland. They become the adults in America. Maybe they decide not to live in Upland. But what do you want them to learn in terms of how they can infuse the American system? And Upland is a part of that. For example, we were thinking that city officials could go into the government classes and explain to the students what their role is, what they're doing, how they make decisions, and maybe showing students how they can be empowered to make changes in their community, not simply just in Upland, but any community they decide go into in the future.
And just an interesting point of context around this, we actually went out and interviewed a lot of teenagers and asked them specifically, what are you going to do after you graduate high school? Do you plan on staying in Upland and living and raising your family here? And a large majority of them said no. I see myself moving outside. So I think this is a great piece that we need to address.
And I think many of the other fellows have touched on what communities are missing in representation in the idea of gracious living. And one of the things that we would then challenge Upland to consider is to redefine how graciousness plays out for all people and all communities within Upland.
And I don't think it's important necessarily whether Upland picks a Twitter feed or Facebook. I think it's about a mindset of you know, Twitter is not just used by the youth, but it's very dominantly used by the youth. But it's creating a mindset of, we are going to create an infrastructure that attempts to reach everybody or makes it accessible for everybody, whether they're coming to the city or the city's coming to them, that there's going to be avenues for everybody to interact with the city.
So it sounds like we've touched on a few of the benefits of gracious living and a few of the costs of gracious living. But do we want to touch on a few more?
Sure. I was absolutely fascinated by the fact, a theme that I think we're coming up with here right now is that there are holes, but I was amazed. Never in my life, I come from Pasadena, it's a rose city. That doesn't mean much to a lot of people in Pasadena. But here, you have a situation where almost everyone we talked to knew about gracious living and kind of had their own idea about gracious living. So it's actually a very pervasive concept out there. But so there are costs and benefits, though, and I think that one thing that the approach of the city government to its identity was very fascinating, because there's an identity here that's largely residential, not necessarily commercial. And do you protect that identity? So there was this concept when we were talking to some city officials that maybe we should shrink the government rather than trying to create a new revenue stream through commercializing, building malls or big box stores and like that. I thought it was fascinating, because a lot of times when I conceived the idea of shrinking government, it's to get out of the way of business. And it's almost like Upland needs to decide, you know, it's like, are we going to shrink government to constrict business? In that sense, it may serve the vast majority of the people here who want to have a largely residential community. But again, there is that minority, the business community, that may say, you know, we are not being served by this. So the benefit could be that it serves the vast majority of the people, and the cost is, do you want to have a consensus, essentially, or is it majority rule? So does everybody have an opportunity, or do we just go with the masses? So.
You know, I want to tie in two themes that came up, and that's the business community and also the youth. You know, the youth is an investment. You know, you have an excellent educational system here in Upland. Everybody praises your educational system. And so you're investing in these children, and they grow up, go to college, but where's the business community in Upland? Where do they work? The current trajectory is not sustainable. Upland is currently facing a deficit, and without that approach to welcoming and, you know, bringing in more business so that those children have a place to come back and actually contribute to the city of Upland, I don't see how that deficit is gonna decrease even with the reductions in government spending. And it's something that I don't think we have the answer to, but I think it's something that the city of Upland definitely needs to address.
To touch on the concept of shared identity, which is this idea of gracious living is to some extent a shared identity of Upland. And what we've seen is that a shared identity specifically here in Upland brings people together. But at the same time that it defines that group and unifies it, it by nature separates it from those that are not within that group. And so this concept of gracious living in Upland is very important to certain people. But it's more important looking forward that it engages people outside of that group and that the full communities within Upland subscribe to and take part in this concept of gracious living. So that the city as a whole can have a shared vision of gracious living that incorporates the opinions and experiences of all the different groups.
Ready? Well, I think we're ready to dive into what did we really find unique about Upland as a city? What was unique?
You know, as critical as I've been of Upland, the reoccurring theme has been that community works, that community comes together, that when people need help, people help people, neighbors help neighbors. And that's evident in the passing of the two bond measures that helped to create that foundation for a strong educational system. That's evident in the last election where the council member was outspent 10-1 and people from the community came in and really made a difference. And I think that's the strength. I think that's what I learned. And I think that's something you use going forward. You know, you don't focus on, I guess you acknowledge what's wrong, but you also acknowledge what's right and you use that in order to fix your problems.
I think just again, similarly, to Joaquin's comment, just seeing the way that certain entities outside of the government have started to come together and collaborate together, work together, the Rotary Club and the other service clubs, how they support other causes, the YMCA's partnership with the school district. I think there are lessons there to be taken away for other nonprofits or other organizations that haven't found those partnerships to strengthen, and also for the government to see where can they support those, where can they learn from some of their approaches, and how can they all use together to build something stronger.
Another thing that I thought was unique about Upland is the fact that if you wanted to call and speak to the city manager, you could do that here in Upland. Versus like one here in Los Angeles, it usually would get like a secretary and that kind of appointment. And so I feel like the people and the government officials here are more accessible to the citizens of Upland. And that I thought was really, really nice. And it also seemed in our conversations that everyone was willing to have a conversation. Everyone was willing to answer the questions. Everyone was willing to accept the possibility that their take on it was not correct, that there might not be a need to finding out other solutions to the problems.
And that's the way it is to us.
To wrap up a little bit, first of all, thank you so much to all the people in this room who have given us input and made time for us and sat with us for interviews and taking calls on the weekend that AC was super important for this weekend. Thank you. And we appreciate your time and energy more than you can imagine. I think when we came up here a week ago, we had one singular question: what is the logic of Upland? And we dove headfirst as a team into answering that question and finding one way to define the essence of a city, and we kept hitting a wall. And that's because what we realized is that we can't boil down the city to one sentence because it's so much more. It's the parts that make it up. It's dynamic. It's interactions between voices. And not only that it is these parts, but the process that's valuable is not answering the questions. It's evaluating and trying to answer the question of the logic. Going through the process of taking a step back and really looking at your reality. before getting wrapped up in an identity that you think you know, taking a broader view of the reality. Just so we are transparent, as a new group, we have been engaging in this painful and enlightening experience ourselves. Roommates down the street at the guest hotel, guest suite, whatever it's called. But with it all, and we came in and we each had a huge desire to label ourselves as individuals, who we were to the group. We tried to label ourselves as a group. We tried to label our working styles, our purpose for the project, and every time we fell short. And every time we had to step back and say, what else is here that we're not incorporating? Each of those times, we were able to identify our strengths and build from that, and also see where our weaknesses were, our next steps, so we could move forward and find new solutions. Our charge to Upland today is to take that somewhat uncomfortable, honest look at who is here in your community, who is being engaged, and who is not, whether it's a family that doesn't come to town hall meetings or an entire demographic of individuals that live here. Be open to the gray, uncomfortable area that comes from communication across all sectors. We think in this way that you'll identify places for growth, places where you need to serve the homeless community in a new or different way, places and ways to support small businesses in ways that push the entire community forward. And we also think you'll find amazing strengths. The YMCA and its ever-changing, growing collaboration with different groups and trying to serve just all people across communities. The school system, which is constantly evaluating how they can reach all sectors. And when you come through that communication process, it's messy and ugly, but you hear all those voices, only then can you really realize your own logic and push your community forward. Okay, with that, we're going to actually have the panelists sit in front row. We're going to transition to the question and answer period.
Thank you very much, Grace. So now, the fun part, the grilling part, where you could ask for more details about the conversation that we had earlier. So we're going to have Chris Margaronis, Drew Steinberg, and Jasmine Hill answer whatever questions you have, and I will be helping with bringing the microphone down the aisle to whoever has questions. So please raise your hand. I'm going in that order. What's your name?
Norm King. I'm curious, as a city, very recent past, Upland has, I'm not sure if this is on, has suffered from some pretty severe credibility and ethical issues. I'm curious as to why you didn't address these, and maybe the perceptions are all in the past and everything's forward, but for a community that has suffered from that type of occurrence, it would seem it would have had some effect in your logic.
So one, looking at the logic of Upland, we wanted to take the product as a whole. So we did consider the fact that there was issues in the past with political corruption and scandals. However, it's not what frames the entire community. As we said, we went out from our research and did several interviews, and from them, it was not the driving focus of the interviews. It was more the driving focus of that this is the community and that they feel that they need to be engaged and move forward. And they're excited about the new leadership in the city and they want to see it go forward. They didn't want to focus on the past.
That being said, a lot of people did address the issue to us and explain, you know, there was a little bit of betrayal. We felt like, you know, this was going on without our knowledge, obviously. And now we're in this situation because of our elected representation. And we sort of saw from our perspective that right now is sort of a chance for the city to come together and unify behind wanting to get engaged. And there's a mutual responsibility, not just from the community to want to get involved, which is lacking in the process, but also the elected representatives to reach out. And that's where we talked about, you know, encountering the youth in the classroom and showing them who their elected representatives are and getting these public forums in these sectors that are not heard. And I think that that would, you know, really provide a strong sense of where to take the city from here, especially considering there has been a change in leadership in light of these things.
So the mic is actually not working. The battery has died. We can use it, you know, the nasally mic.
My name is Gary Lutherford. I'm here from the school district. And in your presentation, I hear that you really tried to identify the key stakeholder groups and get to those people in our community who kind of convene other groups. I didn't hear anything about the Chamber of Commerce, and for me that has been a major convening organization in our community. Can you talk a little bit about why that was absent and your thoughts?
So I think someone briefly touched on the Chamber of Commerce. We did have the opportunity to visit with them and speak with them. I believe that Joaquin and Ian were the ones, Wes were the ones that got a chance to engage with them. From that, we learned about the great services that they offered in terms of trying to support the business community, specifically downtown. One, because of their location right next to downtown. And to us, the Chamber of Commerce really exemplify that example again of community members assisting community members, right? The way in which for many of the folks we talked to, the downtown community did feel betrayed or isolated, like their voices weren't being heard. And the Chamber of Commerce was one of the ways that allowed them to network, to facilitate conversation about how they could support themselves. For example, in one of the businesses we spoke to, they spoke of that while they didn't necessarily feel a great deal of support from City Hall, they did know that the business two doors down had provided them with trees to place in front of their business, that they had an association, the Main Street Association, that worked together to talk about the different grievances and engage with City Hall in that manner. So the Chamber of Commerce has worked to facilitate that and is exemplified of that whole concept of community members really supporting other community members.
I actually have a mic now.
I'm going to show it there. I'd like to commend all of you, first of all, on you all seem very, very bright and very articulate. And I hope that you continue to look at the government sector as a great opportunity for your career path. The government sector really does need bright, articulate young people, especially as it's gotten beaten up throughout the country over the last couple of years. You've mentioned a lot about the business sector. You've mentioned a lot about businesses and meeting with the business community, and that City Hall or having government help the business community. I was just curious if the business community had any specific examples or any specific creative kind of ideas to look at how Upland could think outside the box to help them.
I don't know, from my perspective, from what I heard personally, I didn't speak with businesses directly, but in speaking to some of the elected representatives, there was a vision of potentially adjusting the freeway off-ramp to centralize a downtown, to bring it into downtown so that for, you know, traffic-driven consumers who, you know, you need people to drive by your business to get business, that was an opportunity that the city had in focusing a central part of downtown and not having this sort of lost identity. If someone else wants to speak to how the business is built.
You asked the question about new and innovative ideas. I'm not sure that that was necessarily represented, but I do think that the whole idea that downtown simply needs traffic. And what are some basic, maybe old ways, you know, very normal, common to think of ways that we could make that happen. People mentioned things like multi-level parking. About the mixed-use structures where residences as well as businesses could be downtown to just create a living presence where there's automatically people that live there. They could just go to a business down the street for them or right downstairs from their apartment building or something of that sort. But I think one of the reasons that a clear, identifiable direction of we'd like to see exactly this didn't happen is because in the years past, 5 years ago, the plan for redevelopment of downtown, it seems as if the business community bought onto that, thought it was an excellent idea, and then it didn't happen. So it's still tied to many of those deals, and some people feel as if that ship has sailed and they're trying to figure out what the next opportunities are.
And along those lines, again, some of the elected representatives vocalized a plan or a vision to develop more capital, develop more businesses. But in speaking to some businesses, they felt like that vision wasn't shared with them at all. That they didn't know what the vision was, and they were happy that, you know, maybe the elected representatives have a vision, but that it should be shared with them so they know where that vision is going.
And I was thinking on maybe some partnership that actually the city manager identified, even that the Small Business Development Center actually offers free resources, and I know that's a partnership with the city, and definitely they offer free advising for small business owners for accessing capital, in marketing, and different things like that. So I know that's something that's being utilized with the business community at this point.
Two quick ones. One, more on the humorous note. Ray, I'm sure that on the social networking issue, you can hire David Allen here as our
Can we afford
it? I'm sure we can offer him a first package that would buy him away available. And more on a serious note, moving around talking to small business people in the downtown area, how many of them were aware that our next council meeting would have a specific plan just for downtown?
That was part of the issue, is the whole issue is the disengagement, is the fact that they were not aware of even the fact that when you ask them when is the next council meeting, they actually aren't even aware of when that's going to happen. So to even know what the topic is, they have no idea.
We've had several public meetings in the downtown area, and there's always somebody who won't show up, who will complain later. I think that's something that may be able to play here with that, so I'm just asking this question a little bit. And we have felt for four years, we've been working on some civic plans, cost us a lot of money. Purpose is to change the zoning downtown to enable a combination of residential and commercial lifestyle to coexist to each other. The only way we can get downtown going is to put people on the sidewalk. We've always had to reflect that, unlike Claremont, we don't have a four-year college, university, actually, even a graduate school. Drop people in the community downtown. But we're hoping that mixed use residential lifestyle is going to provide that benefit, put people on the street. I've said to our city planner that we'll know our plan is working when we see a dry cleaning shop come in for a business license downtown. Because then people are on the sidewalk.
You talked a little bit about the business, people complaining after not showing up, and that's part of that mutual responsibility in our perspective, that businesses need to step up too and say and vocalize to you what's the problem, why are they upset, and they can't just complain to us and not vocalize their problems with you, because they're the ones who elected you in the first place, and they should have an open line of communication with you, so it's not a one-sided thing by any means.
I wanted to jump in. I think one thing that didn't come out that I found particularly interesting from one of my interviews is that Shop You initiative. Am I saying it right? I'm not sure I'm saying it right. But the Shop Upland, right. What gets you on the thing? I think that is so creative and outside the box. And I think those kinds of initiatives that don't even just rely on the businesses but start to get into the community with why do you want your tax dollars here, I think that is amazing. And there's ways to play that particular initiative up in different communities at different events. I just thought that was a cool thing that had not come up yet.
Barry Grant, I had an opportunity to visit with Ian West and Chris and Joaquin, and then seeing you young women here today, apart from the future of Upland, gives me great hope for the future of our country. You're just fine people. Thank you so much for your efforts here. Pam mentioned about the benefit that Claremont had with the four-year colleges there. Did you get any opportunity to take a look at what was working other than the fact of the four-year college, why Claremont was so much more successful than surrounding downtowns?
So from what we understood, Claremont had more to offer to its citizens than what Upland seems to have. We've heard from some business owners as well as citizens as well that there's no mall in Upland, so therefore citizens are driven to decide to drive outside of Upland to go shopping and hang out, especially teenagers. In addition, there's also no movie theater with current movies playing. And so that was something that was detracting them, to make them want to go outside of Upland and go to Claremont and hang out in that downtown area as opposed to the Upland area. They just felt that there wasn't enough fun and enlightening activities for them to partake in, whether it be old, young, or even in between.
A lot of it is a mindset of the community here. We talked to a lot of people who said, we asked them, you know, where do you go to dinner? And they live in Upland, but then they went to Claremont. And it's not because they don't feel like Upland is a good place, but they just feel like a place like Claremont offers them something more, a place where they can do more than one thing. They can go to dinner, they can walk around. And I don't think that they feel that way about going to a restaurant in downtown. So that would be something that I would bring up.
To reinforce that point, we're by no means saying that from our interactions, the citizens of Upland don't like Upland. In fact, there's a great sense of pride in terms of embracing the identity that this is a safe, tight-knit community. But like Chris has mentioned, it is very true that even in talking to many of you have mentioned that going to Ontario, Claremont, or Rancho Cucamonga to go, you know, shopping. So in the rough economic time that Upland is in, even in, its own citizens may not even have the outlet to support it with their business. And one thing that was significantly interesting was talking to folks who work in Upland but actually aren't from here. Speaking to people who, for example, I interviewed two young ladies who were from Moreno Valley and said before they were transferred here by their business, had never even heard of Upland, but it was the other surrounding communities that are literally a couple streets over, because they had mall presence, because they had large-scale businesses and things like that, that they were more aware. Now, from my perspective, by no means are we suggesting that Upland build a mall tomorrow, open seven more Targets, and attract all kind of folks trying to come to an IKEA. But what we are saying is that you may want to consider what's going on in terms of the realities of the financial situation, the realities of a growingly diverse population, and also what kinds of things are the true community values. If maintaining gracious living and staying purely residential is your end goal, then by all means, you all are accomplishing that relatively well. But if we're recognizing that there needs to be more opportunity to engage youth, to engage different voices, we do have to look at the examples of other communities and how we're perceived by near neighboring cities.
Is there a next question?
Thank you. I'm Gino Filippi. I'm only been involved in this arena for 8 months as a new council member, and I appreciate all the input. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be interviewed, but I have a couple comments to share. When you talk about expansion in the city and bringing new business, and I come from a family business background, a winery and vineyard operation, so I'm attached my roots, whether it be citrus or what have you. But quite frankly, the developers are sitting on the sidelines. What's happened here is a result of many bad business decisions, corruption, so forth. So you don't want to focus on the past. However, that's tarnished our image, our brand. Fortunately, we have a city manager that does answer the phone. And it doesn't take you 2 weeks to get to his attention, as was the case with the previous city manager. So we're starting to make changes. You have a mayor that's interested in change, an experienced council member, an attorney who's very skilled, and a new candidate or new member coming on, a female. But it's quite sobering to try to put the pieces back together when you do not have the participation of your residents. You look at our election results, or participation, excuse me, of the members of the community that voted, you know, it's not too encouraging. So I have talked to the developers of the bigger companies in this valley. They're all on the sidelines right now watching Upland. So I really appreciate the input here. And hopefully we will take some of this to the next step and implement. But all the things you're touching on are very, very important. So thank you.
I'd like to address that comment, actually. We're talking about some of the more sobering aspects of the reality of what's going on in Upland today. The scandal that hit the city. This isn't strictly an Upland thing. Around Southern California, we've had other examples of this happening. In the United States in general, we've had other examples of this happening. The lack of voter participation. This isn't an Upland issue, specifically to Upland. It's a nationwide and a Southern California issue that needs to be addressed by our nation's leaders too. So, you know, we challenge you to come up with a good way to address this so that you can be a guide for other people in surrounding communities and for the United States to figure out how to engage them and make sure that there is this type of participation.
And I'd like to also follow up on the comments you made. We also spoke with developers in the area, and what they mentioned to us when we asked them, how do you feel after the recent political scandals and corruption and everything? And they said they're taking a step back because there's this lack of trust between the government, the cities, and the developers. And so they don't want to take a step forward and start developing businesses because the trust hasn't been built. The accountability, the systems of accountability aren't in place yet. And you mentioned that to get out to citizens, it's kind of difficult to get them engaged. A bunch of us actually went to the St. Joe's Fair this weekend. We went for a couple of days. And as far as I know, we didn't see many city officials going and approaching the citizens. And so that's an opportunity for engagement. It's fairs like that that were posted in the Daily Bulletin. That's how we learned about it. And then also from one, we did go to an interview for St. Joe's. We also learned about the fair and decided it was something important for us to go to and for us to see how the community at large works.
Not sure that bingo systems on the up and up, though. So that might, I didn't have any luck, so that might actually be a bad spot for you.
And just one quick follow-up. Like Chris mentioned, you've identified a significant challenge and that it's hard to move forward when we don't have the participation of the residents. And like he mentioned, it's a national problem. And it would be way too naive of us to say, well, just fix it, you know, just get out there and engage. But I think what we can look at through our scope of our study is we can see who is engaging the community very well. And why don't we use the age-old, it seems, Upland value of using community partnerships to fill in the gap to try to figure out the answer to some of these problems. Our best example, not to put them on the spot, is that the fact that the YMCA opened very recently and in 6 months had over 1,300 members. How are they doing that? How are they attracting such interest in their services? Not to say that the things that they do can be immediately replicated in a government setting, but it would be interesting to engage in the conversation about what kind of services are you offering? What kind of messages are you sending? How are you branding yourself in the community to get them to be so invested in what you're doing?
One last comment on the business development or the developer side is that because of the scandals, from what we heard, they are... The cost-benefit of them jumping in and trying to do something right now isn't worth it because they would rather wait and let things boil over. And, you know, development is an issue that is very contentious. And no matter what a developer does, there's going to be some disagreement. But at this point in time, they've sort of looked on the city and their development plans as something that they're just going to wait until things boil over and until there's a safe way to go about things.
One thing that I thought was really interesting when we were speaking to actually one of the prominent developers within Upland, the aspect and the point that he made was the fact simply that he wasn't being recruited by Upland. He was talking very specifically about how he gets phone calls from other cities in the surrounding areas saying, what's going on, this is where our city is at, and this is what we need. And so actually I think that's something that Upland can really improve on in terms of just making a phone call to those developers, seeing where they're at, and I also think that'll play on Upland's strengths of those personal connections and those close relationships to start rebuilding that trust.
But just to simply speak from my perspective, right? It seems, yes, we could call developers today and again ask for an IKEA, but the first step may be in engaging in a community-wide discussion if that's the direction.
Can you talk about how you engage the community a bit more? Maybe some things that you found work with some of the organizations or some of the members of the community?
So we found, as noted in pretty much every interview we had, how strong the education system is in Upland. And so we thought that that would be a great opportunity to start to engage the rest of the community, as not only just in the public school systems, but also educating the community at large, as has been mentioned, through town halls. However, focus groups can also be extremely useful, a smaller setting. But the education system, and it both at home, personal level, and in the public professional level, would be extremely beneficial to engage every level of citizen and move forward and to create these relationships that we're hoping to make stronger, as they already exist, they just want to be more connected.
And one more thing to that, I think what worked really well for us was just to go into the community and knock on someone's door or walk into the business and ask them if we could have a conversation, just really simply just going out into the community and having those conversations.
I think it's also important to follow through, to make sure you're not just doing it once and assuming that everything's been decided in that one meeting or that one forum. I think it's what Grace was touching upon. It might take several town hall meetings to draw out and come together and figure out what that vision is before moving on. It might take not coming to the town hall meeting with any plan from any side whatsoever and just creating it together. So I just want to make sure that it's an understanding that you can't just do it once. There has to be a follow through in order to maintain whatever is decided.
I think this meeting right here is amazing to me because we have the city council in the audience and everybody up here. Like, this symbolic right here. So if you look at, like, what Ronnie just said, to go back to that, the idea of not coming in with a plan, you've heard so many different things from what we've said today that it's hit different sectors, different ideas of what a community should be, everything like that. And I think that everybody came in with probably the topic, what is the logic of Upland? And it went, and I don't know if anybody specifically predicted in what direction this went, but if you did, could have saved us a lot of work a week ago. So,
we have time for one more question. Who's the brave soldier here? You can ask the last question.
Stephen Dunn, thank you very much for all your hard work. Not necessarily how I'd like to spend my weekend. Appreciate all the information, all the feedback. Let's talk about the economic reality. We can engage town hall meetings. We can contact developers. We could do a number of things. But the economic reality is that unless it pencils, nobody's going to do anything. We're a nonprofit. We don't have to make profit, but most of the developers, there's a profit motive. And most of the things the citizens want is going to cost money. So have you considered the economic reality in the sense that it's fine for us to contact developers, but unless we're able to give them some sort of incentive being some sort of reimbursement agreements, help buy some land for them, help market their businesses, provide loans, things of that sort. Citizens will come in and they'll want this and want that. You know, we use the downtown as an example. You know, the city doesn't have the ability to redo downtown to the vision that we have coming down the pipe. We need the assistance of developers. We need the assistance of the business community. So how does the city able to implement some of these ideas when money is really tight and we're laying off people and we don't have a source of money? We have redevelopment money that we're able to use to some extent. Now the governor's tied that up. So all these are great ideas, but the bottom line is the economy has to cooperate. Right now, it's not cooperating, hasn't been cooperating for a number of years. It doesn't look like it's going to cooperate for a few more years. So it's really difficult because there's a lot of need out there. I mean, from everything you've said, there's some sort of economic impact to that. And when we're, you know, talking about reducing our organization because revenues aren't coming in, any ideas considered on how we address that?
So I think you have actually been able to successfully do something of this sort of addressing citizen concerns, even with the economic situation, such as the current animal shelter. The animal shelter is, we got the chance to go and visit this animal shelter, and it's amazing. I think it's 19,000 square feet, is that what we were told, or something around those lines. That was an instance in when citizens made a request and government along made the huge impact to make that happen, and that was recent, and that was something that was done for that specific issue. There are so many other issues where that can happen again, and we understand that it's not their best economic situation. However, this is also something that your city is very great at, is filling in the gaps. And so utilizing your other sources, the developers, creating the relationship with them so that they will fill in the gaps when you need them, and you can back to them fill in the gaps for them. It's the whole idea of what the YMCA is doing with filling in the gaps with the school system. That can be continued throughout this city with the government, as well as with business, with citizen issues such as homelessness. As we've mentioned already, the animal services have been taken care of. Low-income housing issues, this can all be taken care of, as you've shown us the example through your animal shelter.
I speak also directly to that, is that, you know, we've heard about the shared tax agreements, which have benefited some businesses, but obviously right now, that's not feasible. And if you're asking us, we don't really know. I mean, neither does the country, and neither do a lot of other cities who are facing the same thing, but it doesn't cost anything, unless you have to pay the phone bill here, to call through the businesses and see how they're doing, and hopefully see if they can get engaged, and hopefully maybe they can come up with something, which is, you know, we've talked a lot about community responsibility, and I understand, and frankly, we talked directly about this, is the lack of participation, you know, the scandal. People are more engaged now, but probably in a couple months, they're not really gonna care. And there is a way to engage them, but it's hard. And I don't know how to do it, and I don't think anyone has the right answer to that question, but I think we have someone who'd like to elaborate on that.
In my prior life, I did get involved with any number of cities, and the one simple thing that could be cured, that could be fixed, to help developers feel welcome, is the gap between the reality of the business world and the experience and world of planning departments. When people come in, construction people come in, they're met with delays. They're met with, well, you didn't have this payment this week, we'll put you over another month. And there's no understanding by the citizens, by the city staff, what it is to run a business, what it is to do a construction project. That can be easily fixed. Become the friend of the developer. Make all your demands as the city requires. No, we can't do that. We need more of a setback. That's what the rules are. And sorry. But to create the impact of saying, you're welcome. How can we help you? Well, I tell you what, do this now, but we'll get you on this month's agenda. We can save you time. Create that impression that you're welcome here. It's such an easy thing to do, and it's hugely important to developers.
I just wanted to jump in and say, I don't think we're trying to create all this work just for for the government. I think that would also be a bad look for whoever winds up here maybe as a placement. So, I'm just kidding, I would love to do that. But I think what we're saying is, let the citizens work for themselves, but cast a wider net to figure out what really is laying a fire under them. Veronica earlier said, maybe right now my issue's number one is education, but if you start people talking and you identify that, okay, this food bank here at St. Joseph's is being run by 25 volunteers, people who are taking their time, and it really needs to provide more and be bigger. If that's something that the community is engaged in, they can do the work. They can write the grant proposals. They can partner with nonprofits. I don't think we're saying you have to fund all of that, because obviously it's not possible. I think we're saying get more voices and then see what they come up with, because you've already been able to come up with so many creative things when that happened.
We're going to end on a remark by the mayor of Upland.
Thank you everybody for being here. This has been a very, very worthwhile project, looking at ourselves from people that have never been here. I want to say there's several ideas that I see on talking to Mr. Philippi's concerned about participation. I went over to Mildura, and over there they get fined if they don't vote. Maybe we ought to think about that. More income, better participation. You have other problems then. But anyway, so that's an idea. I asked very specifically, are you sure? Yes, I get fined if I don't vote. So I don't know. I do know that Mr. Dunn has on his plate goals. In fact, I had even scheduled us to go to Western University for a Saturday for them to host us, hoping we could get closer to them to help us with our animal shelter, make more. We have a deficit of several hundred thousand dollars. Can we bring that down by having them provide more services, was sort of the motive behind that. So I know Mr. Dunn has that. We decided to wait till the fifth person was on board rather than going ahead in June or July. So that is, this is perfect for our goal setting. This is just ideal. And I would encourage all of you to come to that Saturday when we announce it, and let's start digging in here. Let's not let this go by. Let's pick this up and go. Mr. Education back there, Mr. Rutherford, I agree. I changed occupations from downtown Los Angeles to, I drove it for 6 weeks and said, life's too short, and I relocated my job that stayed in Upland. We have the best educational system, bar none, I think, on planet Earth. Of course, I'm a little bit biased. Anyway, let's build on that. That's terrific. And let's build on our strengths, and let's do town hall meetings. I would have been at St. Joseph's, but I had an extremely busy weekend. I've been there the last 2 years. That is valuable. You get to really hear and see. That's a very excellent suggestion, no matter what church, whether it's Catholic, whether it's Jewish, whether it's Protestant. So thank you so much, group. In spite of somebody coming from Florida, educating in Boston, and a Baltimore, Maryland friend. Anyway, it was fun. It's been a neat group. Let's give them a round of applause.
We are very optimistic about the city of Upland, and we thank you very much for welcoming us into the city. We've learned a lot, and we hope in return you have learned a lot from our presentation. Thank you.